So good morning, everybody. I know I've been hearing some really great stories about all of the shuttles that everyone's been taking to get from their hotels and the kind of comical nature that it seems that the bus drivers don't even know where they're going. So people, I mean, Boris, who's going to be up here later, and we're really happy that he's going to be able to join us, was saying it took him an hour to get here on, and you're staying downtown, right? So it's just, it's been crazy. And I know the running joke yesterday, we were in the speaker room and someone said, you know, there's a problem when all the Dutch people on the bus are pulling out their cell phones to track where they're going and telling the bus driver, no, turn right here. The bus driver doesn't even know where he's going. So we're glad you all can make it here. We hope some other people are gonna be able to join us. For those who may be listening to the recording, thank you so much for joining us. But we wanted to go ahead and kind of introduce you to the cloud for Dynamics AX. For those, how many people in the room, show of hands, are current AX customers? Okay, good. Any partners in the room? Awesome. Okay, good. I like the mix. So my name is Winston Haight. I'm the Senior Product Marketing Manager for AX. So I work on the technical product marketing team. We've kind of aligned ourselves now to the new Dynamics 365, and we might as well talk about the elephant in the room. There's a lot of information that I know everyone's looking for Dynamics 365 for operations, which is what AX will be called starting in 2 weeks at the Dynamics User Group Summit, October 11th. So we really invite you to join us. We'll actually be streaming Scott Guthrie's keynote live from the event, and the general session for Christian Peterson. Many of you know he's the GM for AX Marketing. His general session is actually going to be streamed live as well. So if you go to microsoft.com/dynamics or aka.ms/ax, it'll actually take you to the page where you can check back there and you'll find more information about where you go for the links for the live streaming and everything else. So really encourage you all to join in. It's a really exciting time for us to finally have this coming together of CRM and AX and the common data model and everything that's going on. So really excited to be able to talk to you today, though, about just the cloud-based platform for AX and what it means. So I think there's kind of, as we've talked to customers and had these conversations, even working with partners directly or indirectly with the customers, there's kind of three main buckets that those conversations seem to fall into. Digital transformation, how do we help customers evolve? How do we help them stay ahead of their competitors and stay competitive in their marketplace? Cost savings. There are cost savings when it goes to the cloud. Sometimes it's a little hard to see it. Sometimes there's some fear that comes with that, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. And then compliance and trust. You know, okay, my data is not in my data center. How do I feel comfortable about that? Where is my data at night? This is the stuff that keeps CIOs up at night. We've actually addressed that, and we're going to go through that and talk about that with you this morning as well. So these are kind of a number of objections that have always come up when we have these conversations with customers, and it's quite common. And I think it's great to talk to people and kind of explain to them and bring to light what some of these objections are. But the cloud's not for business critical applications. You know, I can run a database here or a website there. Absolutely not true. As you're going to see in the slide, we have over 100 customers now for AX. As you heard in Mike Ehrenberg's general session yesterday, we have over 100 customers for AX that have licensed and are in the process of deploying. These are business critical applications that are running some extremely complex systems. We have customers running on Azure right now that are processing 6 million transaction lines a day. Take that times 365, that's 2.1 billion transaction lines a year. So we can go scale, and if you hear what's going on with what we're doing with SQL Azure and how they're scaling up, the scalability for that is phenomenal. Right now, I think we're looking at, by the middle of next year, having storage capacity of over 50 terabytes. So a lot of the concerns that people have had, we're realizing we're on this journey with Azure, we're on the journey with Microsoft, but with our customers and partners as well, and we want to bring you along with us. Cloud is expensive. Actually, it's not. And the thing to keep in mind is, with what we're doing with the new licensing model for AX, which I'm not going to go into, but the new licensing model, it's a per user per month model. You know every month what it's going to cost you. So you don't have to replace broken equipment. You don't have to worry about, you know, electricity costs suddenly change. We cover all that. All that's included, and we'll talk about that. The cloud is less secure. Actually, no. We actually, in some customers that we've talked to, publishing companies, some banks, they sit there and look at us and go, we can't possibly afford the number of people that Microsoft has just focused on cybersecurity. We couldn't afford to hire that many people. And so we put that out there as kind of our shield that we have to protect your data, whether it's in at rest or in transit, and making sure that it's secure. Lack of control over my data, that's actually something that's absolutely not true and is actually unique to Microsoft. We'll get into that a little bit, but you own your data. We are upfront, very specific, and there's a lot of stuff that we do to make sure and maintain that you control it, and that access to your data is only by you, even when it comes to federal regulators. I'll talk about that. Unreliable performance and uptime of the service. I think you're going to be surprised to see how that relates to our competitors as well as what we're able to achieve, and really look forward to showing you about that, but it's not unreliable. And then integrations are difficult. Boris is actually going to come up. We're really excited he's going to be able to join us today from Exapt, one of our partners, but to talk about how implementations actually have gotten easier. What we've done with Lifecycle Services Solutions, or LCS Solutions, and AppSource, which is the new marketplace for Azure apps. So there's a lot in there that we're going to be able to go over today. So I'm just going to build this out. I love the difference. In marketing, we call this the dome slide. The IT guys call it the protractor slide. So I love the differentiation there. But this is the slide that kind of summarizes AX in a single slide that really kind of gives you an overview of what the product is. So for those who are really familiar with the product, bear with us for a couple of minutes. Want to bring those who maybe aren't 100% up to speed with it so we all can kind of move forward and look at it. So what you have when you start at the bottom, the power of the cloud. We're running on Azure. The whole environment itself sits in Azure. We use SQL Azure. We use a lot of components of SQL, Azure Active Directory, Power BI. You know, there's a lot of components that we use, and there's a lot of power that we get from the ability to integrate with those solutions when they're based in Azure. Continuous life to your system, lifecycle services. For those who don't know it, the service has been out. I can describe what lifecycle services is in 11 letters. LCS is ALM for AX. So it's Application Lifecycle Management for Dynamics AX. And the idea is that we want to help manage the entire implementation and operation lifecycle of AX for you. So it's a series of tools that are free to use, that are provided in a collaborative workspace that's cloud-based, that's designed to be shared between yourself as the customer and partners. And the idea is it's collaborative work. Everyone's looking at the same information at the same time, so you don't have confusion over, okay, what version are we looking at? What documents should we be doing? Everything's in one place. And it really has helped to increase communication amongst partners and customers, even amongst customers and their own employees, but also to help kind of help speed implementations. We've seen reductions in implementation times for R3 by as much as 30%, and we're now seeing production customers go live with AX in anywhere from 60 to 90 days, which for an enterprise resource planning product is pretty impressive. Proven business logic. We brought the business logic from R3 forward. So the business logic and data structures are the same. So for those customers that are looking to go from 2012 to AX, it's going to be a more simplified upgrade, if you will, or we call it an upgrade. If you're going from 2009, there are some changes, and we've actually gone to what we call a migration path with that and a series of tools. I'll actually be presenting that tomorrow morning with one of our solution architects, Manoj, at 9 o'clock as well. Really excited to be able to walk you all through that and what we've got. And then the intelligent user interface. For those of you who haven't been down to see the new AX, go down to the expo floor. We have it running down there. It doesn't look like ERP. As one person said, we made ERP sexy, which Sheree thought was absolutely fantastic. It looks modern. It looks interactive. It invites you to work with it. And so for millennials that are maybe coming into your company that are looking for something that's new and fresh, it's there. For your employees that have been used to an older system, we make it easy for them to come along the journey with you. Task guides and things like that, which will make it easier. Boris will talk about that in a little bit. But we're really trying to make this as an enjoyable experience as you can. ERP is not fun at times, but we believe that we can make it more simple and actually help increase the usage and the onboarding that people have with it. So we talked about the number of customers that we have. These are not to scale, so Soup stock in Tokyo is not in Greenland, that you'll see in the top middle, but the idea is just to show the global distribution that we have of production customers that are running AX right now today. When you consider that the service went live in February, we are really excited that we actually broke 100 customers. And for a cloud adoption program and a cloud adoption product, it's pretty much setting some trends in the industry when we talked to Gartner and Forrester about how fast we're able to get customers up and running. We even got a number of customers now that are actually into the second phase of their implementations where they're actually expanding either the number of users or the geographic coverage of their implementations. And we've always focused on kind of the main functional pieces at the bottom, the different industries, whether it's retail or manufacturing, distribution, but then also getting into budget, expense, finance, and HCM. So all areas that we're heavily invested in and heavily committed to continue to move forward. So for the architecture, I'm going to go ahead and hand that off to Arif. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, Arif?
My name is Arif Qureshi. I'm Director of Program Management for the Dynamics AX platform. What we wanted to show you on this architecture slide is how we've kind of brought forward the AX 2012 ecosystem to AX 7. A couple of reasons for doing that. One of the primary ones is we wanted to have a path forward for the solutions that we have. AX always has at least one solution in every implementation from our ISVs and partners. And we want to make sure that ecosystem comes forward. The second reason is we wanted to preserve the investments of existing customers that have 2012 or 2009 deployments. We want to make sure they have a path forward with this product. So this slide is a build slide that kind of compares the architecture of AX 2012 on the left with Dynamics AX Online Service on the right. And we'll kind of walk bottom up and just to give you guys an idea of how we put it together and how it works. So at the bottom, you know, for authentication services, we used Active Directory in AX 2012. Now we use Azure Active Directory. So similar things, similar APIs, nothing major there. It starts kind of evolving once you get beyond that. So in 2012, we're based on SQL Server, obviously, and SSAS and SSRS for reporting. And on the cloud side, we start moving to more cloud-based technologies with Azure SQL, with operational analytics, column store, and those sorts of features that are coming on, Azure storage instead of file storage, and then the analytics services being slowly replaced by Power BI. So we actually are looking at the new SQL analytics services that's going to be a cloud service in the near future and bring that back as well. We still have SSRS for our reporting infrastructure, but kind of based on more on the cloud platform, and this is where the chain starts. One thing to point out on the Azure SQL database layer, that is growing very fast. So we had, I think, 1,200 DTUs, not 12,000, I'm sorry. That's currently the max. So we know that's increasing to 4,000, 8,000 DTUs this year. So the hardware you'll be able to get with SQL Azure is going to be fairly big fairly quickly, and almost as big as the largest VMs that you can get on Azure. Okay, so the key to our migration strategy has been to migrate the application forward. And the way that we have done that is we've collapsed a few tiers. So on AX 2012, you have the thick client, or you have the enterprise portal tier, and then you have a separate application object server, which is a Windows service that runs on Windows Server. And what we've done for Dynamics AX is collapse all those servers and clients into one AX Common Runtime, and we run that on an Azure Compute. And instead of having a Mompack or some other management software built on top, we have instrumented all the code, so it's enabled for telemetry. And if you go to any of the servicing or LCS discussions, you'll see some of that telemetry in action, where you can IT administrators and folks troubleshooting and at Microsoft or at the customer site can actually look at user activity and drill down into what's causing spikes in your SQL load or compute load and drill in and really manage the service very cleanly in one place. So since we've migrated over, it's a few blocks here, but I actually was on the engineering team when we migrated the client into the web client. We've done a fairly large amount of work here to try to maintain compatibility and move from interpreter to IL and move from the desktop client to the web client, just so that the AX app that you see on top on the left side migrates over to the AX app on the right side. The other thing, there's three other topics there: application suite, application foundation, and app platform. So the other thing we have done is refactored the X++ code and separated the platform from the application. And one of the major things coming in the fall update 3 of the AX platform is that we have then sealed the AX platform, which allows us to deliver the platform without affecting the app in a continuous fashion. So going forward from there, on the client tier, we used to have a Win32 client, SharePoint enterprise portal, and modern apps for expenses, or not that we used to have, we still have in the AX2012 product. We've replaced all those clients with one common HTML5 based client. We will run that client either on a website or in Windows Universal apps or PhoneGap or Android apps. And then as far as development tools, we had Visual Studio, Visual Studio hosted inside of AX. So we had a MorphX window with the Visual Studio editor in it. For AX online service, it's flipped around. So now Visual Studio is our primary development environment, and we host our metadata inside there with Visual Studio add-ins. And then some, I seem to have lost connectivity here. A couple of shared services that move forward. We have data management services for data integration. We've added a few more options for data integration with the fall release. We have a bring your own database scenario where if you want to export your data and run your own analytics solutions, we have that capability. Everything both on the left side with the AX2012 product line and the AX7 online services managed through lifecycle services. So basically, the idea of showing you this stack is to make the point that we've spent a lot of time creating an architecture that would bring our ISV investments forward, that would bring your investments forward in your current deployments. And it doesn't take away anything from new deployments because the whole architecture is tuned for the cloud. It scales with the cloud and is managed fully from the cloud. Okay, the other aspect that we've brought is analytics and separating reporting and near real-time Power BI reports on AX7 online. So not only have we done it for the online service, but we've also done it for AX2012. So in both cases, you have our analytics story, Power BI story, doesn't go against your operations store or your primary database. We have a new entity store where we publish data too, in both cases, on 2012 and AX7. So you can have very, within minutes and sometimes seconds, you can have your Power BI analytics showing you what's going on in your actual business. In AX7, we have an additional level, which is the secondary database that we use for reporting. So that takes the reporting load off your primary database, and it's within seconds of replication. So kind of emphasizing the fact that, you know, from the bottom up, we're thinking about scalable and systems that to run the complex workloads that ERP customers have. The other thing we want to point out is that's the you know, the technical architecture of the product. We actually have a fairly complex topology that we deploy for each production environment. The idea here is to give reliability and durability. So reliability is that within one data center, if you have any problems, we have a backup to cover. So in this example, we have some devices on the left that are talking through the Azure Traffic Manager. The Azure Traffic Manager's job is to route you to the right data center for your workload. And basically, the way that this works is when you create an environment for AX, you pick a region based on, you know, your compliance requirements or based on your locality of your users. So you create a region which is marked here as your primary Azure region with data center. The traffic manager will route the calls to some compute virtual machines that are running the AX common runtime and the AX app. So that first level of compute VMs are running that. Then you have redundant SQL in that data center for every customer. And this is how we, so I mentioned here that we have the real-time secondary database. Those are the two SQLs there. So it's in real time, the transaction log is used to replicate all the transactions to the second SQL. And then that SQL can be used for reporting, and it also can be used if there are any problems to fail over. Then we also have the last thing on this slide is the blob storage. So if you have file attachments or things like that, they're being stored in the blob storage. That's also used for integrations to bring data in and out of AX. So that's the top is what's actively running in a data center, and then the rest of the picture is kind of illustrating how we do data center failover. So if there's an asteroid strike, or, you know, somebody cuts all the wires going into that data center, then the traffic manager starts to route to the second data center. And what we're currently working on is making sure that in less than 4 hours of that asteroid strike, you can be up and running again. And the way that works is in real time, if we start from the right, because that's the easiest, in real time, the blob store is being replicated to the secondary data center. And in most cases, in most regions, we have two data centers within that region. I think there's just a few, like Singapore or somewhere, where we only have one data center. But in most places, we have more than one data center. And when you provision the AX environment, we make sure that your primary and secondary data center are in the same region, but I think at least 300 miles apart or something like that, so that your data has the right locality for compliance, but you still have the redundancy. So the blob storage is replicated. The SQL server data is replicated in real time. So we keep active on that. And then any customizations or solutions you've installed on your compute VMs, once again, pointing out the AX app, which actually is more than AX app. It's the ISV solution as well. So all those things that are applied to your compute VMs You see this little thing called the ASR agent, which is a new feature of Azure that helps you replicate your virtual machines. So the ASR agent will replicate those virtual machines over to the other data center, but we don't keep them running. So that's why you see the X's.
What's the ASR?
Azure State site recovery. There you go. Yep. Thanks, Winston. Yeah, I'd forgotten actually what ASR was. Yes. So Azure Site Recovery Services will replicate your VMs over, and then we don't keep them running on the second data center. And what we do, and this is what we're trying to improve on and get it to be less than 4 hours, is reroute the traffic manager, get those VMs up and running, make sure that there are no problems, and make sure that there's business continuity for the customer. So previous slide talked about we're protecting your investments, existing investments, both for partners and customers. This slide is talking about we give you a very reliable service architecture, and we do all this with pretty good total cost of ownership. And I'll just hand back to Winston and start talking about that.
All right, thank you. So, and just a quick follow-up to what he said about the data centers. There's 34, it gets a little confusing with the terminology. A data center is actually called a region in Azure. So if you see, we talk about that there's 34 regions. You saw Scott Guthrie talk about that in his keynote. That's 34 data centers. And the data centers are always built in pairs. So to the point that Arif was making, the only area, the only geography that we don't have a pair that's regional in it is in South America, in Brazil. That one fails over to the South Central US data center or data region. Everywhere else that we built them, they come in pairs. So Singapore is paired with Hong Kong, Australia has two, and the reason we do this is that we need to have that data sovereignty in place so that if it fails over within the region to help us meet those guidelines. So when we talk about having the German sovereign cloud, that's going to be coming out later this calendar year, as it's going to go into preview. We actually are building two data centers geographically located within Germany that's going to be hosted, or that's going to be staffed by Deutsche Telekom for data residency requirements for German government. But the idea is that it will then fail over within the country, so the data never leaves. And the idea behind a sovereign cloud is there's no connection to the Azure public cloud. All the services run within that cloud independently. So it's a big deal that we're doing these. We're starting with Germany. We're then going to be doing China. So we're starting to see how we build this out. And as Scott had mentioned, in terms of data centers, we have more data centers. We have over twice the number of data centers that AWS has. So there's some stuff we get into the privacy and everything that we'll get into about some of that. So everyone always talks about the cost. And we talked about the fact that we've now gone to a subscription model. Well, what does that mean? Like, how can I wrap my head around what it means to have a subscription model based pricing versus if I have to go out and buy everything, I do that upfront purchase of hardware and software, but then amortize it over the 3-year burn down that you can get. But this is something we tried to kind of pull together, the 6 major areas that when we talk with customers that they seem to kind of focus in on. So the license price, again, it's a per user pay as you go. You can adjust the number of users that you have. You're not locked in. You can stop at any time you want. There's a lot of flexibility you get with that. The difference is on-prem, you have to go buy the hardware and the software up front. So there are some licensing models that Microsoft has for being able to do subscription-based, but for on-prem, but ultimately you still have to go buy all the hardware. We take that out of there, and I'm going to show you, we've got a calculator that I'm going to demonstrate for you that kind of brings some of that to light. The high availability infrastructure. In a past life, I ran product management and product development for a backup software company, and I was always fascinated by the people that talked about that and disaster recovery. They're like, oh, it's highly available. We've got our clusters running, nodes active, everything's great. And I'm like, great, where do you do your disaster recovery? And we're like, well, we got the tape sitting over there. And I'm like, well, what happens if something happens to the building? Oh, well, Bob takes them home to his house every weekend, so we know that that's okay. So if anything happens, we can just bring it back. I'm like, but what if there's a tornado in the area? Because Bob only lives 10 minutes away. So by bringing in, it's included. What he just talked, what Arv just talked about in terms of the Azure site recovery and everything, we automatically replicate it to a data center that's at least 200 miles away from the other data center. And where we can, they're tectonically separated. So they're on different tectonic plates. So if there's an earthquake, it may affect one, but it won't affect the other one. These are the types of things that we look at when we build these data centers and locate them. Sandbox environments. To be able to get up and going, to be able to do your conference room pilots, have your business analysts start looking at what are the customizations you need or you don't need, being able to start doing development work, that's all included with your subscription rate. You'd have to go buy the additional equipment, provision it, rack it, stack it, do all that just to be able to get that environment set up. We actually, through Lifecycle Services, can spin up those environments in a couple hours, fully functional. Servicing production environment, we do that. We take care of all that for you. So we take away that concern, that cost, that headache. And a lot of times customers will sit there and you'll see the people, the employees in the room kind of start fidgeting and getting a little nervous, like, well, if you're doing that, then you're taking away my job. And we go, absolutely not. What we're doing is letting you take the people away from having to just keep systems up and running and put them and focus them on more projects that drive business impact. How would you like to be able to go to your CFO and go, hey, I know there's this project you were interested in talking about. Hey, I've got a couple of guys now that we've got AXM up and going this way. Let's put these two guys on their project and get it done. So, you know, it's funny to sit there and see how companies then start to look at things differently and start to understand what that means to them of what changes they can do in terms of a digital transformation. And with the licensing, you even get additional usage rights, embedded Power BI, that you get the license usage rights to embedded Power BI with the service. So you don't have to go out and buy any other licenses, it's included. So it really, we've tried to encapsulate everything that you're gonna need to have your production environment up and going with just that simple user per month pricing. So, one area that I talked about, I mentioned before, but I think is huge, and that's security, privacy, compliance. People, where's my data? How do I know what's going on? How can I access it? Who can access it? And there's, I think, for us, it is a relentless commitment that Microsoft has to trust. And as we go through this, we talk about Dynamics 365 because that's what we're moving forward with. But those baseline functionality that we build into the product, the software development lifecycle SDL that Microsoft builds every single one of their online applications on, is a consistent commitment to compliance and trust and privacy. So, in terms of security, we talked about SDL. We build it with security in mind from the start. That's how we code stuff. That's how we build and modularize the product to make sure it's available. Customer controlled access, I can't stress this enough. This is a complete unique differentiator for us from any other cloud service provider. You own the data. We are very clear about that. You go to the Microsoft Trust Center, I've got a link. You guys will be able to get these slides afterwards, but there's a link, go to it, look at it. We have tried to be extremely transparent about where your data sits. You choose where your data sits. You choose the data center you deploy it into. It does automatically replicate because of SQL Azure to that paired data center or that region that's in the geography that you're in. But again, we're trying to let you have insight into what's going on with your data. I think the data isolated and encrypted, it's an individual, unique deployment that's for you. You're not sharing the equipment or the data storage space with anyone else. It's isolated. So some of the products that are out there, NetSuite, where they're bringing everything together, no, we isolate you. There's no way anyone can get in unless they have access rights from you to get into it. And defend against threats. We have malware installed on all the systems. We have a team that is global, 24-hour follow the sun, that is constantly monitoring and making sure that there aren't any threats that could do any damage to Azure. And I think the customer-controlled access is one that is unique for us as well. We actually sued the Department of Justice here in the United States to not to say we will not give customer data to a federal warrant that was given to us. We said, you need to go ask the customer. The customer is the one who gives you grants, who grants you access to that. We don't. We won. We're the first major hyperscale cloud provider to ever file the suit to do that. Google and Amazon notoriously will do that behind the scenes. You'll never even know your data was compromised. So again, we take trust very, very seriously at Microsoft. The privacy, again, like I said, the government or law enforcement requests to access your data, we say no. Go ask the customer. Got the warrant? No, go ask the customer. So it's something that privacy, I think, is something that gives you that confidence that your data is safe, that only you are the one who's granting the access to it, and you control who's got it and when. For compliance, we conform to global standards. I will ask a question. How many certifications does AX have today? Any guess?
15.
15. Here are the numbers. I got 15 so far. I think everyone else is sleeping or looking at email. 20. You guys are high. We have zero. I just saw a bunch of heads pop up in the room. I knew that was going to get people's attention. The reason is we just started running the service. We just started going live in February. And anyone who's in the room who's done work with compliance or understands it, or you can tell your compliance people, we believe in being very upfront about this, is that the service hasn't been running long enough for us to have the logs to be audited to confirm that we're running according to the guidelines of a certification. So something like an ISO or a SOC certification, there's specific, they call it standard operating procedures, SOPs. And we have to document those. We have those documented. But you have to be running for anywhere from 6 to 18 months, depending on the certification, before you can even request your first audit. That's the point at which they come in and go, show us your logs for the last X number of months. Have you been following and tracking everything? And the most important thing is, are you controlling the access to the production environment? If there's a bug that's reported and someone has to do a fix, do you log it? Do you grant the access to the person? Do you kind of basically make sure and confirm that the work that they did was done, then remove their access, and then record that the issue's been fixed? That's the kind of stuff that compliances require. We just don't have the logs that have been built long enough for it. To give you an example, Power BI took 4 years before they got their first certification. We're committed to getting there a little faster. So, but I want to be very, very clear. I think that's something really important to let everyone know. We don't have the certifications just because it's physically impossible for us to have them right now. But we have designed the product to meet the guidelines of certifications. We have the statement of procedures. We have everything that's in place for that. It's just a matter of time and getting those systems up and running. And then transparency. Like I said, you know where your data is stored. You tell us. If you want it running in Singapore, it'll run in the Singapore data center. You want it running in Australia, you want it running in India, we will put it where you want it. And the advantage is we can deploy to every public Azure data center in the world right now. So the flexibility you have is pretty much unrivaled in terms of being able to put it where you want it. Oh, and then the Microsoft Trust Center, I've got a link on the slide that'll take you there. There's a lot of information that you'll see there. I invite and encourage you all to go there. We even have things about SLAs, which I'll get to. There's a lot of detail that's in there because Microsoft believes in being very transparent about all that information. So in terms of, you know, we're going to talk about security and privacy in a little bit more detail right now. You know, you use state-of-the-art technology in terms of security. Right now, there's 7 physical layers you have to get through before you can get to a server in a Microsoft data center. There's actually a funny story about a guy who was we were talking with, who works in one of the data centers, and he goes, just to go get a soda, he has to walk up to a door, scan his badge. Then he has to step into a room that's got a glass door in it. The door behind him closes, the glass door's in front of him. Only when that door closes can he scan his badge again, the door opens and he can go through. Just to go get a soda, he's got to do it both ways. So one of the advantages that we also have with security, and the reason that Azure has more compliance certifications than any other hyperscale cloud provider in the world, is that we own the data centers. We own the land, the buildings, everything. So that gives us a lot of control. AWS, what they'll do is they'll go into a local provider and go, hey, I'll rent that corner of your data center. You know, give me a 50 by 50 foot square, I'll put up some chain link fence and a gate. Great, now we have a presence in Latvia. But how secure is that? And that's what's kept them from getting some of the compliances globally that they've been looking for. Data encryption, we encrypt it at rest and in transit. And we even got a piece, I think, I'm not sure if we included the slide, but I don't mean to steal some of his thunder. We have a piece coming up called Key Vault. And the importance to that is we give you the encryption keys. So if we want to get into your system, we have to ask you for permission to get into it to fix anything. Again, you own the data. And not only do we encrypt it at rest, we encrypt it in transit. Microsoft owns over 1.5 million miles of dark fiber. We're one of the largest dark fiber owners in the world, and that connects all of our data centers. Again, that's why we get the compliance. We own everything in the system. And so we can have end-to-end security that way. Your production infrastructure and customer data is isolated. As I mentioned before, it's unique to you. You're not sharing it with anyone. You're not sharing the hardware with anyone. It's isolated and unique, giving you that peace of mind. And I think the other thing on here is, we've talked about a little bit before. Let's see. Oh, and every production deployment has its own VPN. I think that's important as well. Again, it's giving you that control over how you then can set up your networking to go to that system, whether you want to use ExpressRoute to go from a local entry point into Azure to connect into the different data centers. You can use that for a local connection, say in Australia, even though you may be running your data in a US data center. It helps you attack and kind of look at latency issues and things like that you might have when looking at networks. Yeah, absolutely.
The virtual network for each tenant all has like a real security hardening implication. So imagine if there is somebody buys a virtual machine in Azure and uses that machine to try to attack other machines in Azure. Because of the virtual private network, they're not even on your network. They have no ability to access your network within the data center. So every tenant has their own virtual private network that keeps their cluster of machines together and not separated from all the other clusters. So we have separation of the data, separation of the compute, and also separation of the network within that data center.
So three different layers, of separation.
Yep.
Okay, no, that's great. Thank you. And so when we look at privacy, again, not to repeat, because you're seeing kind of some consistency here, we really drive this point home. Been in a lot of discussions with customers where even after you talk to them, they're like, yeah, but you know, can Microsoft get in and take a look at my stuff whenever they want to? No. You own the keys. And I think it's something that it's so hard at times for customers to understand. Like, so you just give them to me and I can do whatever I want? Yeah. Use them however you want, do whatever you want. That's what Key Vault's going to be really useful for. And so it's something I think that's great to put there. As you see on the implementation details, we have the you choose where you want to go, the data, the encryption and everything that we're doing. And role-based security, I think, is also important. In the product itself, in AX itself, there's role-based security. So people only have access to the information that you grant them to have. So if you go see down in the expo hall, when you go and look at AX, it's the administrative view. And there's, I think, 40-something workspaces, as you can see. Well, if you're someone who's maybe just in finance doing procurement, you may only see 6. There's physically no way that you can get to those other ones unless it's enabled for your role that's set up, and you set that up and define that within AX. Compliance, we talked about it. We actually had looked into what our competitors were doing as well and what they had. And it was interesting to see that a lot of them don't have some of the standard ones that we thought were going to be out there. So again, They are on NetSuite and Workday. They're online services as well. They're going through the same process of having to document, look at, and get audited. When you're audited, they'll come back and tell you where you have gaps. When you have to, what you have to do at that point is then fix those gaps, run for that period of time again, and bring them back in to have it to have them audit the books and your logs to make sure you're following those procedures. So it's not a simple process to get these different types of certifications. Now, the one thing everyone's going to ask: when are you getting ISO? When are you getting SOC? We don't disclose specific, I'm going to say, make sure I say this correctly. We don't disclose the specific certifications that we are going to achieve, and we don't disclose time frames. Main reason being liability. If we tell you I'm going to have ISO by February and we miss it and we only get it in March, then you may have planned your business to run by that time. What we do say is we are committed to getting those certifications that support the needs of our customers' business. And based on the fact of what we've learned with Azure, I think they've got 37 compliances and certifications they've achieved. We share all of that work amongst ourselves, amongst the products in Microsoft. So we know what they did. We've designed things to meet those certifications. We just have to have time pass so we can get the logs to then be able to get the actual certificate, the little logo or what have you. And when we have those certifications, we make them available to you. So you get all the audit reports. So for your audit requirements, you can have access to all those reports that would be for AX to be able to then turn around and use for your compliance use as well. So then we talk about reliability and consistency. So uptime. So the uptime for AX right now is 99.5%. That's what our SLA is. We have been running, I think, in the past 3 or 4 months at 99.9 something. And so we're looking at what we can do to possibly raise that. It's not a commitment, can't quote me on that, but it's what we're learning from running the service and what we're understanding about the infrastructure, how it's been designed, what we've been able to do in terms of working with SQL Azure and everything else, and those different services that RF had mentioned that we have a dependency on within Azure.
SLA. We actually plan to run much higher than that, and that's what Winston was talking about. We'll reevaluate, what the that uptime number means to our, our business, and change it.
Exactly. Well, and it's interesting. I got a slide coming up that'll show you what other competitors' SLAs are. You might be surprised by some of them. Let's see. In the reliability, we have the proactive monitoring, everything that comes not only with our DSEs are our dynamic systems engineers, but also Azure system engineers as they look at Azure itself. So we've got teams of people that are constantly looking at this and trying to understand threat detection, threat dissemination, being able to make sure that the systems are up and available whenever and wherever you need them. Availability and disaster recovery, the resiliency, that redundancy. Azure Site Recovery is something that we're super excited about. Because right now, the way that we do it, it's a manual process for us to be able to get everything back up and running. Azure Site Recovery allows us to automate that, and you'll see what that'll do to the SLAs for that. And then the SLAs, we financially back them. We kind of put our money where our mouth is. So for the kind of six areas that we highlighted, what you want to do is look at the very top line. So we're 99.5, so is SAP. When you look at NetSuite, it's actually 99.5, but they measure per quarter. We measure per month. So if you drop below, and if you go down to the very bottom, the service credit, if we drop below 99.5%, but stay above 99% in a month, you'll get 25% of your license fee back. If you drop below 95% for a month, we refund 100%. The thing that's interesting is if you go over to Workday, well, before they give you any refund, they still request a meeting, and the maximum you'll get is 50% back. And the other one for SAP, if you drop below 50%, so you can't access your system for 2 weeks out of a month, that's when they'll give you 100% of your money back. So we are confident enough in Azure, we're confident enough in what we have as a product that we put our money where our mouth is and have that available. The disaster recovery, the RPO and RTO, that's the recovery point objective and recovery time objective. So where do you want to restore to and how long does it take? So It's less than 5 seconds because we're using SQL Azure, but that's the piece, the 2 days right now, because it's such a manual process for us, that's the one that Arif said we're gonna reduce to anywhere from 4 to 6 hours with Azure Site Recovery. And Gartner's guidance that they kind of give people is 12 hours. So we're gonna be able to bring that below the Gartner guideline, and that's something that's gonna be coming, I think, in the fall release, so in the next few months. And again, when you start to look at proactive monitoring and alerting, the trust center there that we highlighted for Salesforce, they actually will show you the outages that they've had in their different data centers over the last 90 days. So again, full transparency, we want you to be able to see what our competitors are doing as well. I think the planned maintenance is also one that's kind of interesting. We allow you to choose when the maintenance is gonna be done. So we'll send you 5 days ahead of time, we'll send you a note saying we have an update that's planned, maintenance work that we have to do. Here's the different time slots, choose the one that's best for you. No other vendor's doing that. It's either hard forced of it's happening at this time if we even tell you it's happening, and they don't give you that option of what you wanna do with it. A lot of times everyone's doing it on weekends, it's kind of the standard downtime, but a lot of times they won't give you any warning, or if they do, it's 2 days or less. So it makes it very difficult for you to run with an online service when you don't even know what to expect that could be coming up. Trying to get the clicker here. Here we go. So as we look at cloud servicing, for users, again, you can set up role-based in terms of security within the product itself. With lifecycle services, you actually can then set up the users that are being invited into the projects. They're set up from the standpoint of you and Microsoft are the only ones that for a production environment have access to that. And then you invite in whoever you want. So you can invite in your employees, you can invite in different partners. Maybe you have one partner that will help with the implementation and another one that'll help with the operations. So once it's up and running, you can then remove the partner that helped kick things off and then add the one that you want to, and once you remove someone, instantly they have no additional access to the system. They can't get in. Application, again, you define the business processes. It's very straightforward. Actually, Boris is gonna help talk about that a little bit. Define, develop, and operate. Those are the kind of life cycle phases that we have for LCS in terms of looking at defining what you need, developing the customizations, and then getting the system up and running or operating. Monitor and manage non-production deployments, so you can go in and look at all of that. You actually can look at and see what the operations are in terms of the monitoring of what the system health is and things like that. We provide those tools to you for the production environment as well as your non-production environments, your sandboxes, if you will. And then manage the ISVs and third-party implementations that you put in there. What customizations do you want? Ones that you develop, one that a partner helps, or one that a partner may go get from an ISV, and being able to put that in there. Again, we do offer 24/7 application servicing. That's standard with that license that we talked about. That's why it's such a big deal when you start looking at what the license fee is. Overall, I think right now with AX, granted it's changing a little bit, it can give you an idea. We lowered the minimum number of users from 50 down to 30?
No, I think even lower. Some of that stuff will be announced with the Dynamics.
Okay, 365. The whole point is even if you take the 50 user minimum we have right now at roughly $200 a user a month for an enterprise user, it's $10,000 a month. That's pretty cheap for getting an ERP system that can be deployed globally anywhere and be able to support your operations. So that when you start looking at the numbers that way, it becomes much easier to understand this is what it's gonna cost. And the beauty is it's consistent every month, unless you add more users. And then the infrastructure we've talked about, the isolation, everything else that we can do with it, I think is really helpful. So we talk about this digital transformation that we try to help customers with, and I think it's that continuous innovation piece that we want them to understand what to do and kind of help them to understand what the capabilities are. A great example is we had one retailer in the US that had just wanted to take some of their old legacy systems and come up with a new modern ERP system. And then we started talking to them and said, well, in addition to that, because you're running in the cloud, you now can start using machine learning. And as you kind of can look at not only recommendations, hey, you bought this, maybe you want that as well, But you now can do buy online, pick up in store. And their eyes kind of lit up. They're like, we hadn't even thought of that. And they're like, but we've been trying to do that. And we figured that was going to be 5 or 6 years out. We're like, you can do that. We can help you get that going to go live. And so that's when they start looking at, well, if we do that, then can we start changing? Maybe we do different types of stores. With our cloud POS system, you can take literally any mobile device and turn it into a POS system. So you want to do pop-up stores at the holidays, or you got a special event you want to do, you literally take the device out, and within 5 minutes, you can have the mobile device as your POS connected to your ERP backend. Warehousing, manufacturing, everything that would go in there. So it's amazing what you can start helping customers to view it, how they can bring themselves forward. So what we have here are, as you saw before when I was talking about what the licensing things were, we talk about kind of an iceberg. You know, at the top is, oh, it's $200 a month, but all these things that are underneath it that you get that help you to really see what the transformational differences are and, the operational differences of what it would cost for yourself versus doing it on-prem. And then the TCO compare, I'm not sure how we're doing on time. If we have time to show it. We've only got about 15 minutes left, so
yeah, maybe that's
I'll skip over that. What it is, and I can talk through it a little bit, what you see on the graph on the left is we actually did a study with Forrester, and they actually went out and interviewed quite a few customers of ours independently of us. We asked them to do it. They went and did everything unique and isolated from us. And what they did is they got a lot of information back that we put into this what we call a TCO, or Total Cost of Ownership Calculator. You can work with your Microsoft representative. Soon you'll be able to work directly with your partner because they'll have access to this. And you can sit down and go through the different costs you have. And we looked at everything, electricity costs, hardware core costs, what your employee costs are, licensing fees, everything else, and sit down and take a look at it and say, if I'm running, the blue is AX7. That's the Dynamics AX, which is available today. The yellow is R3. That's our current, that was the prior version. It's just about 2 years old right now. That's running it on R3 on Azure. And then the green is R3 on-prem. And the beauty of this graph, and I think what it really shows is the blue, it's a straight line across because it's just subscription fees. That's all it is. When you see in year four the little green pop up, that's because you're doing a hardware refresh in year three. So at the beginning of year four, you have that expense. The calculator, you can say, I only do a refresh every 5 years. See what that changes. And it's a way for you to sit down and really start looking at what's that total cost of ownership that you have for running something on-prem versus in the cloud. So I think it's really important to kind of highlight for that for you. Please reach out to your Microsoft representative and say you'd like to sit down with them and go over it with them. I think it's something that helps not only you to take a look at it, but it's something you can take back to management and go, here's what we've got. Here's what we're looking at, and even work with them a little bit on it and see what's the advantage to us of doing this. And this is anecdotal from one specific customer from the Forrester research that came out that I thought was kind of interesting of the total economic impact study that they did. So we had total cost of ownership, but there's a total economic impact. What are the advantages that you gain from running this cloud service? LCS reduced the implementation time for them by 30%. They were able to move from CapEx to OpEx of about £500,000, British pounds. They eliminated their hardware refresh, which remember that little green blip that we saw in year four? They got rid of that. That was £200,000. And they could reallocate the 50% of the IT people to other projects. You know, it's that whole 80-20 rule. 80% of your time and money is spent just keeping systems up and running. Well, if I can take that from 80% to 70%, effectively, I just increased your ability to go spend time on other projects by 50%. It went from 20% to 30%. So little tweaks like that can really start to help you understand the impact of doing this. The first line says, we have achieved a 1% uplift in sales by using business intelligence to recommend products. Doesn't sound like a lot. They're $1 billion-a-year company. It's $10 million. Just for implementing this, and that's $10 million every year moving forward. Training sales associates takes half the time we would have with another ERP system. Boris can talk about that a little bit. And using mobile services, our drivers can make 2 extra deliveries a day. You didn't buy additional equipment, you didn't hire additional people, but you now get 2 additional deliveries a day. those start replicating across a company, those can start meaning really big economic impact for your operations. I'm going to go through this a little quick because we are running out of time and I want to make sure we get Boris up on stage to talk to you because he's probably a lot more interesting than I am. But one of the things that we have is the AppSource, which is the Microsoft Marketplace in Azure for different applications that our vendors have and have put together. It's a way for you to go and find those applications that specifically fit to your business needs and what you need and help you manage the application lifecycle. So it allows you to go in and simplify the discovery of those applications that fit what you need. Their LCS solutions, they're curated, and I'm going to show you what that process is like. It's much more complex than you would think, but we do it for a reason, and that's to guarantee quality of the applications that are available there. And then we help you do more with your existing Microsoft applications. So it's not just for AX. This is for other products as well, CRM, Power BI, and everything else. So these are some of the partners that have been able to go through the curation process. Currently, we have 57 that are in AppSource right now, with more coming every week. And just to give you an idea, this is what it takes to get curated. So it looks like a complex process, but it's more just a process of going through and making sure there are checkpoints along the way to make sure that they're doing things the right way. We have a very high curation bar, and it's something we take very seriously because we want our customers to know when you see something in AppSource, it's gone through code review. The business process libraries are in place specific to your industry needs. You have demo data that are in there. The help files are up and working correctly. It installs correctly. Even basic things like that, the partners have to go through all of that before it can be certified to then be put in the Azure Marketplace. So I'm going to turn this back over to Arif.
Basically, all of this, the curation, the managed, Microsoft managed service, the tooling to kind of do implementations is all centered around this time to value proposition. And the circle on the right side and, you know, the legend for it are all the things in order to get a successful implementation, because what you're doing, you're not just buying the product, you're adapting it to the customer's business, you're adapting it to all the trading partners the customer has and creating all those integrations, doing the user training, the system configuration, app configuration, all of those things. So we've talked about, you know, faster selection through AppSource, faster design, easier integration through our tooling, better quality implementations through our methodologies, and improved uptime and satisfaction because it's run in a controlled fashion with the right set of people. So I'd like to invite Boris from XAPT up on stage. Boris is a program manager with XAPT, and they follow our methodologies. They've added their own methodologies. They use some of our tools like the LCS business process management tools, the task recorder, task guides for user training. So, Boris, I'll let you.
Beam me up, Scotty.
Yeah.
I always wanted to do that. Well, now that I've been built up, I feel like the prettiest girl at prom. But I come from XAPT. We're a Microsoft partner. We have a solution that's tailored toward the heavy equipment dealers. We've partnered, obviously, with Microsoft, and we've built on the LCS solution. And by the nature of our customer, we've really had to tailor our implementation and our strategy. And that's what I'm responsible for. Some of our customers they've been around for 100 years. Their current systems can be 30, 40 years of data that we're migrating. So it's some pretty heavy-duty stuff. Most of our clients have about 800 documented processes, in some cases 8,000, anywhere ranging from 50 users to 8,000. So scalability is very, very important to us. And methodology, obviously, is very important as well. So without it, we're an implementation that can take a year and a half can blow up into something that's 4 or 5 years, which is what the industry ranges outside of our product. So that's just a brief introduction on myself and my company.
Right. Yeah, if you could just flip forward, we have some screenshots from your, from some of the stuff that you're using from LCS and also, you know, from the AX product itself. So the AX product or the AX online service has tooling to help guide you through these, you know, adapting the product to the business processes of the company or customer you're working with, or if you are a customer, for you to document your processes in a standard way and then have the partner of our ISV kind of adapt their software to it. So here we have an example of Exapt's business process library. Maybe you can talk a little about that for us.
I'd like to tell a little bit of a story. I've come from the Dynamics world ever since college. I've actually, in my college systems classes were all taught on Dynamics. So my whole entire life, I made some mistakes, like become a CPA and then, you know, to get here, but hey, no one's perfect. but I've, when I switched over to this side of things and from the customer side, my mother told me she was going through an implementation. My mom's wonderful. She's incredible at her trade. She absolutely sucks at computers. Her two uses for computers are Facebook and her point of sale at work. So when I joined Exapt, my mother told me two things. Always be nice, because there's somebody who on the other side could be just like me and make things simple. Make things simple and make them usable. And this is what I live by. If you can't make something simple, you just don't understand it well enough. ERP can be difficult, but it can be very easy. So my whole aim and everything I do is to how to simplify a process, how to do the things the right way by our customer. I don't want to spend 4 years doing something that can take a year and a half. I also come from the dark ages when I asked, how do you do a bank reconciliation? And our partner dropped off, printed out something from Partner Source, which was about 400 pages of GP documents of how to do a bank rec. Okay. I asked him how to do something else, and he was like, well, this is how we make our money. And he opened up Partner Source, and we looked at Partner Source together. I never want to do that to a client. If I do that to a client, I have failed. My company has failed. I will never do that. What Microsoft allows us to do with LCS is to document everything, to make it simple. So we have every process. We have the 800 processes that our clients go through daily. We have them documented. Behind every process, we have the diagrams. We have the business processes mapped out. We'll get to the task guides, which are incredible. But the process flow chart, even way before we even get on site, we can push this to the customer through LCS. They can literally just go through this and map out their current business and know that we know their business. And way ahead of time, they can say, well, you have a sales order done this way. We actually procured the equipment a certain different way for other vendors. So we ahead of time, even way before we get there, we already know our customers, and the customers know that we know them. And having it all in one solution is just, I don't want to be corny, but it's just freaking incredible. We have three or four different pieces of software that we've developed to do this, and having this is just incredible. It's helping us make implementation, not implementations. What we want to do is onboard people. We want to onboard people onto the Microsoft product,
right.
And
so,
this is what enables us to
so
do.
We have a few more minutes. You guys also have a very good. So not only do you have your processes, but you also have task guides. So I wonder if you could talk a little about that.
And task guides, in really short, before I start losing people, task guides are I believe the best tools to actually enable our clients to learn the system. So if you're looking at something like a bank rec, instead of me dropping off this giant document on your desk and say, well, learn it and ask me questions, what this does is, in real life, you open up the solution and it guides you. It says, go here, click this, click that, and it's at the process level. So 800 processes, And we don't have to have a two-hour session of how to teach somebody how to do a rental contract if they have a question of, well, how do I recall a machine and put a different one? So we have a process just for that. They open it up, and it guides them through the software how to actually do it. This is absolutely the best tool that I've ever seen that I can actually show a customer, a client, an end user, or even somebody on our own staff, a new member to our staff, of how to use the system. This is just, I don't want to be corny, but incredible.
Right. So thanks, Boris. So not only do we have ability for partners to document the processes that they use, but the partners can build up this knowledge and then reuse processes. So you document, you know, for your first customer, you refine it by your 10th customer. And what we really want with the new AX Online service is that you get this repetitive, mm-hmm. you build a rhythm, you build your knowledge in your space, and we, with the AX Online service, enable you to have a substrate where you can then have lots and thousands of customers, or our goal. Yep. And through these tools, documentation, guiding users through in their daily work, through, you know, task guides will tell you, click here, enter in this field. That level of detail is how we expect to kind of take this fairly complex area of ERP and scale it to thousands of people.
Yep. And you're absolutely right. It's all about making it repeatable. We don't, if we did a, and if we implemented a solution at a dealer, we want to be able to do it again and again the same way. We have an industry-specific solution, and this is what's going to allow us to do it.
All right. So I think we'll end there. Thank you all for coming. And we do have a few more slides of our roadmap that you can take a look at when you get access to these. The main point of showing you guys our roadmap, what we have today, what's coming in the fall update, and what's coming beyond that. You see Key Vault there, a key security advantage that we're going to have, is that this is a continuously evolving service. We want to have continuous delivery. We want to have the reason we split the application platform from the application and from ISV solutions is so that we can innovate and give features to the service without affecting the application and all the stuff that has been modeled to the customer and deployed according to their business processes. So once again, you know, you guys can take a look at these slides afterwards. We are committed to this service and, you know, delivering features in it every quarter. All right, thank you.
Can I grab two more minutes
sure.
About
sure.
why we believe AX in the cloud is also a major improvement in it? Unless you've ever dreamt or had a nightmare of waking up the day after Valentine's Day, having promised your wife that you'll spend at least a couple days home, and getting a call at 5 o'clock in the morning saying the DNS has crashed, the SQL cluster is no longer a cluster, and everything is shut down, that's a very good reason to be in the cloud. And its scalability. I mean, that's the absolute worst that can happen. But some of our, we've had other instances where a customer, a client of ours, comes to us and says, "Hey, we just went live with you, but we actually acquired another business where we're adding another 200 users. How can we do it yesterday?" Well, you either start acquiring a whole bunch of equipment, licenses, and everything else, or Azure makes it all perfect. It makes it so much simpler to be able to just go in, procure more processing power, a few more licenses, and we've actually, even before AX7, we've started putting some of our services into Azure, like our BI product, because that's all, you know, it's all demand-based, so it doesn't have to be always up. So even before 7, we've started moving some of our stuff to the cloud, and a cloud makes everything, for us, it makes everything much easier, because for us, it's all scalability. Like I said, some of our clients can range between 70 users to 8,000, and it's the same solution. Exactly, same solution, same processes, and this makes it completely, we're able to scale much better with the new solution.
Great. Thank you, Boris.